once again, I'm going to do the broken record thing, and just because it just, I just can't say it enough. This has not been the most sort of enjoyable week for me. And just the moment that your faces started popping up on my screen, my body start to sort of relax. And sort of, this is the definition of why the community, the Sangha, is one of the, is a third of what we take refuge in, right? In any times of dukkha, suffering, stress, one of the three things that we are told to look toward to have a sense of well-being is our sort of comrades on this Dharma path. So I thank you so much. Such gratitude. So is there, I have an idea, I have, you know, some idea of what I want to discuss tonight. But I'd also be interested in hearing if anybody has a specific topic request or sort of question about practice or, you know, how some particular aspect of the Dharma relates to some particular part of recovery. I'm happy and I would love to address any questions that anybody might have. So, any takers?
Well, I'm just gonna go ahead and go for it actually today. You know, I'm working in the sort of field of emotions right now. And, you know, you did a piece several weeks ago about happiness and there's one emotion, right? There's the whole panoply of emotions though. And as a sort of Dharma practitioner, what do you consider your relation to emotions more generally? And what do you think the sort of Buddhist teachings are specific to people's emotions? Or how do you use Dharma to work with emotions?
That's a great one. So.
And if that has nothing to do with what you really wanted to do tonight, then we can do it some other time.
It actually works kind of perfectly. I think the question that you raised really sort of runs parallel to what I intended to talk about. Emotions, they're not a problem unless they're unpleasant, right? We've never felt a pleasant emotion and said, damn it, stop being so pleasurable. I think that the reason why I think emotions particularly negative emotions or unpleasant emotions, feel so troublesome, is that we fall under this sort of misunderstanding. We perceive them as sort of real. We perceive them as a fair assessment or correct assessment of what is actually going on, right? If you've ever sort of had a heartbreak or, you know, real longing, loneliness, depression, it really feels that you are stuck in this sort of tornado hole forever, and there's never going to be any getting out. Emotions are misunderstood by us as anything other than a specific combination of a certain narrative of the mind mixed with a particular pattern of physical sensations in the body. And so that really is sort of a kind of new or different concept of what we have sort of grown up viewing emotions as. You know, sadness is sadness. Happiness is happiness. And they're entities unto themselves. In the dharmic sort of understanding, emotion, also known as mental states, right, is the result of this continuum of the mind body, and the Buddha, when discussing this, he didn't really distinguish sort of this is the body stuff, this is the mind or emotion stuff. They were sort of interdependent on each other. Have you ever felt so sad and about to cry that you felt that like sort of nail kind of getting pressed into your esophagus? Have you ever felt joy with a sort of a weighted heart? Probably not. Joy, happiness, typically, if we look at it, they're associated with the physical sensations of sort of a lack of weight, sort of expansiveness, a absence of any sense of contraction. As we practice mindfulness, right? Often, so mindfulness consisting of the four foundations of mindfulness. I think it's, there's an amazing monk named Tan Jeff. And he's based in Escondido, just outside San Diego. And he doesn't like the translation of the four foundations of mindfulness. He uses the four frames of reference. And I think that that's probably a more apt description. So first we have the physical sensations and the body and the breath. The second frame of reference, second foundation, is this this automatic labeling, essentially, or automatic felt anything that we experience through any of our senses. And in Buddhism, the mind is also considered one of the senses. So any thought, smell, taste, touch, vision, or sound, we experience each one of them so quickly without typically ever registering, we experience them as either being pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. As an addict, I sort of have a proclivity toward intensity. Give me a shitload of pleasure, or give me a crazy amount of unpleasant. I want that intensity. With mindfulness practice, we are training our minds to sort of sensitize ourselves more and more to the body, so that we sort of shift that longing for intensity, right? And we become sensitized to the body, where we can notice a slight sort of unpleasant sensation. And in noticing that, we then have the ability to respond wisely. So stay with me, because this is gonna come back to emotions. Everything that we do, or everything that the untrained mind does, we typically simply react to unpleasantness. We are so aversive to anything unpleasant that we'll even take action, not because anything is really unpleasant, but even just the idea that something might become unpleasant. Or if it's a sort of a bit unpleasant, we will take action to make sure that it doesn't become really unpleasant. And the untrained mind is sort of a robot to this, from everything to not getting close to someone in fear of rejection, to maybe shifting your posture in meditation, not because you're in pain or that the physical sensations in the back are really unpleasant, but they're a bit unpleasant and you don't want it to get really unpleasant, so you shift in anticipation of more unpleasantness, right? So one of our objectives in our meditation practice is to sensitize ourselves to what we experience as pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, and what the hell is neutral. As someone in recovery, I'm like, neutral? That sounds horrible. I don't even know what the hell that means, right? As we sensitize ourselves, this, actually, rather than sort of seeing a sensation as neutral, I think maybe more we start opening up to the idea of something being experienced as neutral, because we're so used to get me high, like crazy, chasing pleasure, or I hate my life, crazy unpleasantness. And so we've been conditioned to sort of overlook neutral. So if you bring your attention to maybe the thumb in your left hand, provided that you haven't broken it or severely injured it lately, your thumb in your left hand probably doesn't feel good, and it doesn't really feel bad. Neutral. So we have this, we have a instinct to push away or try and do whatever we can to get rid of unpleasant sensations or experiences. And we have a built-in instinct to grasp on, search for pleasant experiences, sensations. And we've all of these situations that we've just covered, those are just physical, right? Now, factor in the third frame of reference, the mind. How many times have you said to yourself, oh, I just want my mind to shut the fuck up. I feel like I'm always bombarded by these thoughts. I can't take it anymore. These thoughts, if you're anything like me, I have a lot of thoughts that somehow are typically along the narrative of Jordan, you suck, you know, in some variation of that. You're gonna be lonely for the rest of your life. People are gonna find out that you're a fake, whatever the, you know, all these different variations of sort of talking shit to myself. as we hear them, we've throughout our lives, we've heard these thoughts and we've just accepted them as like, well, if it's coming up in my mind, then we've never really challenged the truth of them. We've never actually sort of, the first time I actually ever really challenged what these thoughts are, or maybe more so, the first time I was ever given the tools to be able to name those narratives that I hear about myself as thought, as opposed to I'm just telling myself what it's like, you know, telling myself this is the situation, this is reality, was practicing and learning the Dharma and being able, being told that, Jordan, you can cultivate the ability to just notice thought. I mean, that is revolutionary. That thinking is simply the activity of the mind. I can notice these thoughts and I don't have to agree or disagree with them. They're thoughts. And so sometimes they're, you know, really not fun. And I think the unfortunate news, I hate to say, is I don't think that, you know, shutting the mind off or, you know, ridding ourselves of negative sort of self-talk, it's probably not a reasonable expectation. And I say that from my direct experience. And also from different parables or different stories in the earliest writings, teachings of the Buddha, collected as what's collectively known as the Pali Canon. Mara represents, he's like sort of the Buddha's devil, right? The way that the Buddha finds, so the Buddha sits under the tree and says, I'm going to rid myself of suffering no matter what, and I ain't going to move. Long story short, he has this epic battle with the devil Mara. And Mara like throws all these different things, lust and fear and, you know, things that like he could be greedy about. Finally, the way the Buddha defeated Mara is, I love this, is he just said, I see you, Mara. I see you for what you are. Ha! How incredible is that, right? So, rather than getting rid of these thoughts that are unpleasant, we can take a page out of the Buddha's book and say, or label, oh, I see you, thoughts. your thoughts. Now, the other part to that is, all along the Buddha's life, up to the point of his deathbed, occasionally he was visited by Mara. And Mara would continue to try and like, hey man, so you want to like rule the world and stuff? And each time the Buddha would, hey Mara, I see you. What's going on? Like he wasn't, if he was able to, since he was able to say, hey Mara, I see you, he wasn't able to be tricked into thinking Mara was anything other than just Mara. So a fully enlightened Buddha was visited by Mara. I think it's probably fair to say us enlightened people are also going to be visited by Mara, maybe a little bit more frequently. And so our job is just to say, oh, the mind's talking shit again. Shocker. Big surprise. And you can, I mean, there's an, if we're able to do that, we actually create a sense of opening and separation where we can even kind of start joking about it and laugh, like, hey, mind. Oh, I'm not, you know, worthy or whatever. Like, come up with some new material, mind. You've been saying the same kind of thing for, you know, decades. So we have these mental narratives. We have this pattern of physical sensations. When a mental narrative occurs, it sometimes is accompanied by a specific sort of pattern of physicality. Those two combined into what we label as emotion. Of course, it would be nice for us to sort of feel happy all the time or feel content. And unfortunately, you know, if anybody figures out how to do that, let me know. The problem then, with emotion is we want to rid ourselves of what we feel is unpleasant emotion, right? The tricky part about emotionality, as opposed to just looking at something physical or noticing what's occurring in the mind, is the combination of the two creates this really felt sense of realness, if that makes sense. It feels like this is, this is what reality is at this moment. And this is where I think equanimity comes into play. And this is where what's known as the eight worldly winds come into play. Equanimity is the sort of ability to sort of be a palm tree. I know that's a really odd metaphor, and for those of you joining on the phone, what I said, equanimity is like a palm tree. The people who are on the video all kind of did like one of those like puppy dog kind of like, huh? Head turns? Like, what? Like, did he mean to say that? So, those of you who did not grow up in LA like I have, palm trees are very long, tall. Okay, I'm joking. So in the wind, these palm trees are nuts because they sway back and forth. You would think that they would topple over. And a lot of these palm trees, if you stand at the base, they're not, palm trees are not straight up and down. Like the top of the palm tree, if you're standing at the base, it, you know, sometimes it's maybe like 6 feet to the side. And so these palm trees are able to sway in the wind and remain firmly planted in the ground, and they don't fall over. That is essentially what we are trying to sort of cultivate with equanimity. This sense of I can stay firmly planted in sort of my truth in the midst of this life. Even though there might be physical pain, emotional pain. The practice of upekkha, equanimity, is it's so easy to sort of become a tumbleweed and just kind of get blown around by all these different feelings and situations. the eight worldly winds, the eight vicissitudes, are what sort of defines, kind of sums up why and what our difficulty with emotion is, and it gives a I think a pretty good rationale for why equanimity is so important. And so these worldly winds, they come in pairs. And the idea is, no matter what you do, we don't get to control the wind, right? And so our job is just to sort of respond to wherever the wind is blowing. Or like when I grow up, I want to be Leonard Cohen. He said, you need to become like a buoy or you'll be seasick all day. So, big up Leonard, miss you, Bo. So, no matter who we are, no matter what we do, the Buddha experienced this. Jesus experienced this. I have experienced this. Bad joke. We're going to experience pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, and sort of prestige and disgrace. Did you know that the Buddha, there was multiple assassination attempts on him? Did you know that people sort of picketed the Buddha and like talked shit about him? I mean, no matter how good you are, these are just things that are going to occur. And because being praised feels good and creates a pleasant emotion, because blame or disgrace is associated with an unpleasant emotion, we run into the problem of wanting this moment to be other than it is, and mistaking emotion for reality. How many times did someone have a craving to use and felt like, I don't have a choice, I gotta go get high? How many times now have you sort of rode the wave of a craving and said, okay, this is a craving, I can sit with it and it'll pass. This is a craving. seeing the craving as a craving. Stops this illusion that it is referencing something real, and it is not describing reality. Because I felt a craving, my reality was I need to get high. And so, no matter who we are, no matter what we do, pleasant emotions are going to come, unpleasant emotions are going to come. None of them are going to stay forever. Our task is not to sort of change our emotional experience. Our task is to investigate and change our strategy into how we experience emotion, how we relate to emotion. My mom passed away 9 years ago. And I was biggest mama's boy ever. Will always be. And I had the honor of moving into her condo and living on her couch for the last 3-4 years of her life and being her caretaker. When she passed, I, for the next few years, started having just panic attacks. And they were sheer terror. And if someone told me, okay, well, just breathe, it was like, no, because each breath I take is a breath closer to the last one I take. Ah! Like existential crisis. I felt like I had to run away from this panic, do whatever I could to get rid of it, because it really felt like I was in impending danger. I was going to die at any moment. That's what it felt like. Panic attacks. They're horrible. I was on retreat, a panic attack sets in, and the panic continued, and it lasted a little bit longer than it normally did, and I noticed this panic attack is lasting, quite a bit longer. And I haven't died because of it. But it felt like I was going to die at any moment, Like, oh, this is emotion. It can't hurt me. Let your heart break. Let anxiety come and kill you. It's only then when we realize that they can't break us and they can't kill us. And they're all experienced in this present moment, right? But so many troublesome emotions have to do with the past, something happened, or the future, worrying about some unknown fantasy. So as we're experiencing, you know, any emotion, be it, you know, a welcomed pleasant emotion or a shitty unpleasant emotion, ask ourselves, how much does this have to do with this moment? How much can we sort of no matter what we're feeling, knowing that we're experiencing all these things in this present moment, our sort of our workout regimen for our heart and mind is asking ourselves, how much can we welcome this present moment as if we invited it? I mean, this present moment is all we have ever known. This present moment is all we have ever known. So how can we change our relationship to it to allow this present moment to allow ourselves to sort of work with it versus struggling against it? Can we allow this present moment to be a teacher, therefore possibly a friend, versus an enemy to get rid of? As we, you know, this idea of can we be in this present moment as if it was in, as if we invited it? There's an expansion of a sense of awareness, I think. And if we think of our awareness or our heart as a sort of container, the bigger our container, the more at peace we can be. This is occurring in awareness in this moment. Can I be with it? Am I mistaking bunch of different patterns coming together as reality? And so this is not to say in no way will I ever claim freedom from unpleasant emotions ever. The Buddha's two sort of chief disciples, one was Sariputta, the other one was named Moggallana. And I think it was Moggallana, he died. And Sariputta, fully enlightened, hearing that his best friend died, he was talking to the Buddha about how he was feeling, and he says, "It feels as though the sun has been extinguished." That's heavy, that's grief. And if there's a way to experience our heart hurting and just knowing the heart is hurting, can I be with this? It's the making of this present moment an enemy that creates the dukkha, the unnecessary difficulties and sufferings. You know, and last, going back to equanimity, there's some sort of traditional equanimity phrases. And one of them is something to the effect of your happiness, no matter how much I wish well for you, is dependent on your actions. Now, take that and bring in the precept of not taking what has not been freely offered to us. Someone is giving me problems, someone is talking shit about me, and it makes me worried or doubtful, upset. Their emotional world, as much as I wish well-being for them, we know that people hurt people because they don't fully understand that my happiness and your happiness are directly related. Are we taking what has not been freely offered to us? Them being upset with me, or you know, this person having a difficult time, or whatever the case may be, am I taking emotions that are not mine to take? Can I have, you know, rather than sort of feeling guilty if someone's upset or whatever, and accepting essentially accepting blame, or thinking that actually has something to do with me other than their well-being, which I have no control over. Can I allow them to just have their feelings and not take what isn't mine to take? So I hope that was somewhat helpful.
Yeah.
About sort of how emotions are generated, how we experience them, what to do when they are experienced.
That was beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. And on that, we're at a close. Hope everybody appreciated the opportunity to spend some time together this evening. It's good to see all of you. And we will do this again next Wednesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, and whatever time zone you're in. So how about a dedication of merit there, Mr. Kramer?
I would love to. May any beings that we come across experience the benefit of our practice, our effort, our beautiful intention of attempting and trying and putting effort into cultivating a little bit more compassion, our effort into cultivating a sense of caring for ourselves and others. And may all beings know the experience of feeling safe and secure, loved and cared for. May all beings know freedom. I love you. Keep going. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody. Good night. Have a splendid week. See you next week. Take care.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks, Jordan.